Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport London. And me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. It is our Monday night fan show special. And up now, it is the boys from Brisbane Road. Yes, Leighton Orient. The Leighton Orient fan show with the Low Down podcast. Julian Firm with us, as always. Hello, Julian.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, very good, very good. Good day today, good day today.
Yes, indeed. You've been speaking to the new permanent manager of Leighton Orient, Ross Embleton, haven't you?
Yeah, all good. Very interesting. I think he, again, holds himself very well, how he speaks to the press and also to the club generally. So I was pretty impressed with today's time with him.
Lovely stuff. You're not alone in the studio today because we have our next set of super fans. I like this theme that we've got going along here with the Leighton Orient fan show on Love Sport. Welcome, a father and son combo, Pete and Dale Halls.
Thank Welcome. You very much for having us. Yeah.
Delighted to have you on, gents. So, first taste of the Love Sports studio. What do you think?
It's what I've always dreamed of.
Good. I was hoping you'd say that. So, Julian, Ross Embleton appointed just shortly after we were on air last week. Sadly, we weren't able to talk about the confirmed appointment. It has happened since then. And you were speaking to him today at the training ground, right?
That's correct. Yes, he had a press day today to go through. Sort of speaking to individuals. He wanted to get the press there to share. But also, he went to some moments with the radio show and he chose us.
Wonderful stuff. Well, we're going to get straight into it because it was a very good interview you had. You covered all kinds of topics, by the way. I listened to it earlier. Brilliant journalistic technique from you, Julian Fern. What about my job? I'm not going to lie to you. I might be a new presenter of the Leighton Orient fan show. We're going to hear from Ross now. Of course, you opened with the fact that it had been quite a hectic period for him.
I had the conversation with Kent. I had a conversation with Nigel. Obviously, Martin followed up anything that they had to say whilst they were away. Spoke to Matt Porter and then obviously consulted in terms of the family, my family and people that are close to me to help me, you know, make sure I was doing everything in the right manner to make it happen. But there wasn't anything else in all the build-up until that moment that it was actually announced and I was told that I was finally named as a Leighton Orient manager, albeit, again, another extremely surreal feeling that follows up a number of surreal feelings throughout this season. It's an unbelievably proud moment. It's something that is indescribable in terms of knowing that where I've been with the club, what I've done with the club as an employee, but what I've done following the club as a fan is... it's mind-blowing, to be honest.
Yeah, I think you probably may have seen some of the social media pictures of you from your 7 to 8 years old to where you are now. How'd the old man take it?
My dad's quite cautious because at the start of the season there was a home game and I let him come in the changing room because I wanted him to see how comfortable I was with doing the job that I did. You know, I've lost my job at times since I've been involved and there's been tough times, which like there is for everybody in every walk of life. But he obviously worries about me and my family making sure that I'm all right. And I think I wanted him to see that I was capable and I wanted him to see that I was in control and I was happy doing the role. So I think that reassured him a little bit. I think I probably don't talk to him enough about 4-4-2, 4-3-3, 3-5-2 and the players that I pick within the system. But I think I do that sometimes for him as much as I do for me. But I think for the whole family that everyone's incredibly proud, you know. Used to sit in the East Stand with my dad, following the club. I think it was all a little bit strange. And when it's finally happened, the messages that I've received from him, but as well as everybody else in my family, that how proud everybody is of what I've been able to go and the job I've been able to go and get, but the fact that, you know, the history of the club and the family is one that everyone's immensely proud of.
I think the biggest thing you can see from afar, I think you mentioned about moving on, changing, developing, growing, you can see that, even though that period as interim, as you sort of got after Mansfield and we started to see the Ross elements of their moving forward. I think Satty was a great opportunity for people to go, you know what, this guy does know what he's talking about, and it always takes time. But you know the guys around you, the guys you rely on day in, day out, how are they feeling now that you're a permanent role, you're their gaffer, you're the boss, not just the interim boss? How do they feel?
I feel like, without them telling me outright, I feel that hopefully they've seen me grow, me progress in the short time that we've all been doing this bit together. Looking at the people around us right now, I feel that in the last 10 days, the last 2 weeks, as it started to probably look, albeit no one had the real clarity until it was actually announced, really, that this was going to happen. I feel that everybody started to grow a little bit more. I feel that everyone's shown that little bit more comfort. I think me, Dan and Joby are a lot more happier expressing our opinions to each other. We all see football differently. I think it'd be uncomfortable if we all thought exactly the same, or if we were all on completely different pages. We've all got our similarities. I mean, there's no secret of how well Danny and I get on as people, and I think it's been seen by the videos that the club have put out in the past that we've got a great relationship away from it. But I think what it's allowed us to do in the last couple of weeks is we've all been able to express our ideas, our concerns, our beliefs on what we think about football in the comfort that there's going to be no falling out, there's going to be no people, you know, slamming and doors and walking away from each other, that we've all got that utmost respect for each other, that we're all willing to embrace and listen to what the other ones are saying. And it's vitally important. It's vitally important because, you know, there's massive parts of this job that I'm still picking up on and I'm still learning in the same way that they are. But we all need to feel comfortable enough to say what we think and make sure that we're comfortable in coming to that agreement and make sure that things are done right, ultimately for the team in the end.
The last thing for me, and probably a lot of fans would like to say, Justin was a great influence on a lot of people. People who didn't even know him influenced us on us. What's that real strong mantra you're going to take from what he's given you over that period of time working together, you're going to take forward and continue to build in your day-to-day?
I think the biggest thing that probably won't inspire people straight away on the football front is the importance of family and the people who are around you. I mean, the importance of living your life, the importance of you know, spending time and showing an interest in not just you, like obviously first and foremost your own families, but the people that you come and work with every day to make sure that their lives are lived to the best of their ability. I think that can be such an easy thing to say, live your life, is live life to the max and all that sort of thing. But one thing that man did was did that, and his family were at the forefront of everything. And I think that's something that I'll continue to do. You know, if someone's got a important parents' evening with their kids, they need to be there. If they've got, you know, if their wife's got something on that's of a major importance, they need to be there within, obviously, the professional behaviours that we expect of people. But I think those things are vital. Coming to work every day and enjoying what you do. But while you're here, give 100%. It's such an easy thing to say 110% and all those sorts of things. But when we're here, we're bang at it. When we're here, we throw everything into it. And you need to aim to achieve that every day. Are you going to perform to the very best of your ability? No. It's humanly impossible to perform to the best of your ability every single day. But can you make sure that you give it every effort to make sure you put every ounce into it? And I think that, for me, is something that I take off of that man, is to continue to drive to be the very best that I can. And then hopefully the staff and the players around me, and then ultimately for fans and people on the other side of the club, will experience the benefits of us going to work and doing our jobs to that level every day. I think I understand that not every fan wants me as the manager. I understand that people, like you use the phrase that you use, I split opinions. I think any manager splits opinions. 100%. Jose Mourinho split opinions when he got the Tottenham job, and he's, if not the best, one of the very best. So I understand. All I ever want and all I ever ask for, and I have done on occasions, is that people support the players and support the club to the very best of their ability. That's what I want. If they then love me off the back of it and I take us to wherever it is that we all want to end up, then fantastic. But whether you like me, whether you don't, whether you want me, whether you don't, stick with the players, stick with the club, support us to the very best of your ability, and then we'll give ourselves a chance of doing that.
That just shows that you are a top guy you're a top manager, and more importantly, I think you're a top fan. And best of luck from everyone, really.
Cheers,
Ross.
Thanks, mate.
Lovely stuff. That was Julian Fern, our very own Julian Fern there of the Lowdown podcast, telling Ross Embleton he is a top whatsoever. Love it. I tell you what.
Lots of tops.
Yeah. What's great to come out of that? First interview, compared himself to Jose Mourinho. There we go. Job done. But no, I have to say, gents, a great, great interview, Julian. And I think the bits that really stuck out for me, one, it makes you realise how much of an Orient man he is. Two, he really thought long and hard about this, didn't he, this decision. And three, his man management. I think that's going to be key moving forward.
So he came into the show before Christmas, and when I walked him back to the station, he said then I wanted the job, but he had to sort of go through some hoops and convince convince himself, because there was still those clouds. Yeah, he was Justin's man, etc., etc. I think he said one thing he has learned is over the journey, and he repeated again today offline, talking about he's realizing those mistakes he made, he will not repeat them. But reality is, he's got the buy-in of the players, he's got the buy-in of the backroom staff. He does split opinion, and he absolutely knows that. And the bit he said at the end there is that he said, I get that, and any manager will split opinion, but get behind the boys. The boys haven't done anything wrong. What I really liked also from the type of players he's looking for, that was interesting, because they're not sort of just traditional players that you would expect someone like a Justin to bring in. He's been thinking really long and hard about the type of player he wants to bring in for this league. We're settled now in the league. We need to push on, and he knows it. And I was really impressed. He held a 42-minute press interview before that, just general to the press, and he held the room really, really well. And I think there wasn't any ums, ups, buts, maybes. He was calculated, calm, and delivered a really clear message that everyone should have walked away from that and truly understood what Ross Embleton stands for.
Well, he did say, didn't he, gents, that he splits opinion. The whole fan base was really split with regards to this appointment. Dale, where do you stand on the appointment of Ross?
Well, I think he wasn't my first choice, and I'm more than happy to say that. But what I really did like from that interview, and every time you hear him interviewed, he is himself, and he will give you an honest answer. What you can see there is it was the continuation of, I believe, the Justin legacy in regards to blending that mix between manager and mate. Like when he looks there and he's saying about, you know, if you've got a family emergency, if you've got, you know, it's your kid's parents' evening, you've got to get, it's family first. And I think that's got a link, obviously, with Martin Ling, with the Mind charity. You know, he's a big patron of that. So, I just think that from a mental health point of view, which is very important at the moment, I think that is brilliant. The fact that, you know, that it's kind of instilled within the runnings of the club. Would I have liked someone that had a bit more experience? Yes. Would they have been able to make an instant impact? Yes, but would it have had a lasting impact? I'm not sure.
Agree with that, Pete?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Dale said there. I mean, it wasn't our first choice, but the more you listen to the guy, the more you can see him growing into that role. I think people have got to give him a bit of time. You know, it's a shame he didn't take it first time around, really. It's taken for us to go through the Cole-Fletcher saga, really, for him to come round and say, well, yeah, I want this job now. I think if he'd have taken it the first time around, I think he wouldn't have split so much opinion. I think the problem was he said he didn't want it, but now he's saying he does want it, so let's see what he can do.
I think he didn't want it because he didn't want to sort of follow into Justin's shoes. Having that Cole Fletcher break is enabling him to do that. I'm on the same as these guys, and I told Ross today he wasn't my first choice. Ross had a bit of a joke with us. We sit in the show before Christmas, you know, the 10 game scenario. He said to me today, I've got 9 games in, yeah, under your watch. So I was going, okay, yeah, have a bit of fun there. And I know Pete sits behind us in the south stand, and I know Pete's opinion of Ross will be in about 4 weeks, will be Embleton out, so I'll be waiting for that chart.
I'm not going to lie, I wasn't overly convinced by your evaluation. there, Pete. Gents, we're going to speak a bit more about this in a moment or two on the Leighton Orient Fan Show. Do not go anywhere.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leighton Orient Fan Show here on a Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Julian Fern of the Lowdown Podcast, joined by superfans, father and son, Pete and Dale Halls, too. Now, gents, we were talking about the Ross Embleton appointment. Julian, you spoke to him. We all just listened to it just then, and some really interesting points that he raised. And before we went to the ads, you did mention there that Pete might be, you know, four or five games down the line, potentially...
Four or five, I said three.
He knows me too well.
But, is this a fear? So it's a 12-month rolling contract that he's on, right? So ultimately, we all want to believe, we all want to hope that he's going to get to the end of that 12 months.
Good for you, 12 months, you know, again, a poor number, isn't it? We've got, so it's half of this season,
yeah,
half of next season. So the January window next year could be quite a challenge for us, you know, if it's not quite going to plan.
Is that poor management then? Is that poor foresight?
No, I mean, the whole debacle about saying getting the contract sorted over Christmas and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If he was the right man for the job, and that was decided in November, December time, lawyers should be lined up, everything should be done and dusted, you know. That's the one thing I would say about the whole saga, if on a personal note, it just seemed it was dragged out for too long for the wrong reasons. Should have been done and dusted, because we was all in the stands, all having our opinions, you know, we're saying this manager, that manager, we should do this, should do that, they're playing rubbish. So and it's unfair on the players, on the club itself, and on Ross and the management team. Now it's been done, we've got to get behind him. And I think for me, I think what we're going to see, hopefully, now it's been done and dusted, we'll see the team go on as Ross said earlier, they're not going to be coming sort of winning games 6-7-0, but hopefully people start to see what he wants to put on the side, so the players know who the gaffer is, and the players and the coaching staff know who the gaffer is. And those were the things he was saying was going around in the back room, is players weren't quite sure, you know, what was next for their own careers as much as his.
I think the you know, there's one word that can sum up the season so far, is inconsistent.
Agree.
Yeah, we've been inconsistent from a club perspective in terms of the way we've communicated out. We've been inconsistent from a playing perspective. You know, there's been no real formation or, you know, it's been changed around so much. So I think if we, you know, we just need now to get some consistency back, both from a club and from a playing perspective. And hopefully, now with Ross there as head coach, perhaps that can sort of move forward now.
Head coach, that's the important thing here, isn't it? It seems like you have to distinguish now between head coach and manager, and this is a big part of how we decide what these managers are going to be. And you mentioned the long drawn out interview process as well. Another former manager who we've already referenced on this show, of course, did allude to that earlier on this week in an interview that he gave. And some interesting quotes there. He said that the whole situation made him more disappointed in people, that you have to think about who you're going to trust moving forward. But that whole period, I suppose, of Fletcher is over, and like you said, maybe he should have been given the job before Carl Fletcher was even appointed. But that whole long drawn out interview process, because Carl Fletcher alluded to that as well, Dale, is that something that the club maybe should address in the future, should we get to this situation again?
Yeah, I think so. I think you can see that from the way he spoke with the interview that he gave earlier this week, he'd had time to polish up in what he was going to say, and he was very good at getting across his point. When you see him in a post-match interview where he hasn't had any time to think what to say, he was a rabbit in headlights. So I think, you know, it's interesting because the club have obviously given a period that he is allowed to impress effectively. And, you know, he's brought in his portfolio of this is what he can bring to the squad. And as I said, we were talking on the way over and we were saying, obviously, his previous role at Bournemouth as the loan manager, that means he's out at games watching these players. So surely if he's watching these games, he knows players for each position and he knows, you know, where we need to strengthen. And maybe he just went a bit heavy-handed.
But the interview process, I think, what you alluded to earlier, yeah, if it's lengthy for him, it's lengthy for Ross. I think we've gone from the man who should not be mentioned era, our mad Italian who is literally dictatorial, to a very management by committee, and everyone's got an opinion. So straight down from our owners, investors, our chairman, down to old directors are backing the club, doing a great job, Lingy, and then everyone else who wants to play their part. So everyone's got an input. And as you know, in any organisation, when you've got more than two or three people making a decision, it does management by committee, it takes time. That shouldn't have happened. Yeah, I think the club should put his hands up, and I think Nigel has said that he takes it as chairman on the chin, that it was his decision. He'll have to live by that. It has taken too long, but it's there now. We've got the transfer window. Ross is in charge, and as Pete said, the inconsistency needs to stop, and that's communication and the lack of or the poor leadership, not the lack of leadership. We've got good leadership and poor leadership.
It is interesting though, because you talk about the fact that it's management by committee, but then when you hear, I heard the interview with Kent Teague and Travis, and they've got the transfer committee. So, you know, we're still not learning from that committee. I think if it might be the fact that because we've got a director of football, they need their say, because we've got four people that are all given an opinion. We've got those people all talking around the table. But if he's going to be backed to have his squad, then surely his say is worth more than the committee as such.
I think just building on that, if we looked at the other side of the coin, you've got Ian Holloway gone in at Grimsby. He's gone in there as manager. He's made two good signings, and it's happened. Mm. And we're still waiting. So,
but one thing Ross would say is he said today is that ultimately, the committee, or whatever you want to call it, he lives and dies by the decision. So if that's the player that you're going to get, he says yes, the one. It's on his neck, not on Martin Ling's or the chairman or have you. It's on his neck, and he knows it. And that being head coach, he's fully aware of what those decisions could look to the Orient faithful if they don't go quite the way.
Pete, where does this rank for you in terms of where the club are since you've been supporting them? I mean, how long have you been a Leyton Orient fan now?
Since 1971.
1971, so a fair few years. Yes.
The George Petchy
era. You should have learned by now, really.
So in terms and of...
I'm responsible for bringing my young man next to me into the Orient family, along with my daughter, who... isn't with us tonight, but
forever grateful for that, Dan, I'd imagine.
Yeah, oh yeah, of course. Yeah, when you've got everyone else. When I was a kid at school, I was the kid with the Man U shirts, you know, and then Southend were our local side, so we went over to Southend for a couple of years. I don't like saying that. Yeah, I don't like saying that.
But, oh, crikey.
But then my dad turned to me and my sister and said, "Do you want to go and watch some proper football today? It will take a bit longer in the car." So lo and behold, we end up at Brisbane Road, the home of football, beating Hull 3-1 and never looking back. So,
great story.
Yeah.
That's how it should start. So in terms of then, I suppose, when you first started supporting the club and yourself, Pete, how do you feel things are amongst the fan base and with the way the club's being operated and everything that's going on at the moment?
Well, from my perspective, I mean, obviously there's been too many ups and downs, really. I mean, there's been some good times and some bad times, and the bad times were when the Italians were in charge. But at the moment, I think if you look at it as a project, since the new guys come in, we're ahead of the game from a club and from a business perspective. Where we haven't moved on and we haven't pushed on is on the playing side. And I think, you know, getting promotion from the National League was great. We all enjoyed it. It was a great time. But we just haven't pushed on this year. And that's the frustrating. I know there's been things going on in the background, poor old Justin and whatever. But there had to be a time when sentiment stops in football. You know, football is a results game. And, we definitely need to push on for the second half of the season.
I think it's all about sentiment, and one thing I noticed in the training ground today is that Justin's picture and legacy is around the training ground. And when I spoke to Ross and we talked about Justin, and you can see it still means a hell of a lot to him. He's in his office and Justin's picture's on the wall, and that never go away. But even Ross said it'll be time at some point that we have to, it's not a draw a line, we never ever ever will forget. but we have to move forward. And that's where he's hoping he will be able to take the club forward. And I agree with what Pete's saying. I think off the pitch, we've done a lot of things, some stuff I disagree with, but I hope that's not a problem. But on the pitch, I think we need to step up now.
Absolutely. And I think you're right in terms of the tragedy that happens at football clubs. It's then the management of that tragedy which invariably helps the club eventually move forward, isn't it?
Agree. And I think the club has done a fantastic job. But now we are sort of a number of months down the line. We'll never forget, but it's now Ross's job to take the club forward. And I think he's capable of doing that. We have to get back behind him. But I think the one thing Pete did, and I think that's a real good point said earlier, is the consistency. We have to be consistent now. You know, decisions across the whole club, communication, back to where we were probably about 18 months ago. Yeah, which felt really good. To be an Orient fan for a period of time, it felt really good.
Yeah, it did. And it all started officially with a 1-1 draw last weekend against Grimsby. We're going to be talking about that next.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
The Leyton Orient Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Right now, we're focusing on the O's. Julian Fern is with us from the Lowdown podcast. We've also got super fans Pete and Dale Halls with us too. We're going to be reacting to the Grimsby game next. Bit of transfer talk as well, and then looking ahead to the clash with Port Vale at the weekend. Carol Shanahan, the co-chair of Port Vale, is going to join us on the line for that. We're also going to look ahead to the next 10 games under Ross Embleton. But the first one, gents, was against Grimsby at the weekend. I believe the first team to score against the club in Ian Holloway's tenure thus far. So there's a plus straight off the bat.
Yeah, definitely. As I say, and there were green shoots of recovery. Like, you know, there definitely was an upside. I think that the first half, it was solid. It wasn't spectacular, but it was solid. Second half, we started on the ascendancy. And maybe, naively, pushed forward looking for the win, which was very important to get. One single mistake and then we're 1-0 down, and as usual at home we're facing the barrel of a gun. And you know, but what I've got to say is the fight from the players when we went 1-0 down was the reason that, you know, we got back into it, and that may not have been there a couple of weeks ago.
For me, I think looking at JMD, I think JMD was probably one of those classiest games he's played for us. I think the deliveries in the box, Ross was saying today, and I keep repeating it, is that was the intensity they wanted, to want to put the balls in the box where they felt they could hurt them. And I think that unfortunately there was two or three instances where Angel and with Connor both had chances, and the keeper pulled absolutely worldies off, so which is cool. One question to you guys, you know, we saw Coulson back in the side on Saturday. What's your thoughts?
I'll jump in here. I do think that in regards to Coulson, if we look, I don't want to do it because I'm comparing it to another team, but if we look at the team that came up with us, they should never be named Salford. They've got a very...
And you did.
Oh, right, you're not meant to say it.
Thanks, Dale.
Accidental Partridge there.
We've mentioned Salford and Southend in our show. Fantastic.
But... As I say,
you mentioned West Ham, that's it, we're out.
We've just got the Holy Trinity. But as I say, they've got a very similar player to Coulson in Carl Pierjani, that sentimentality has meant that he's now gone out on loan. I think that he came into the squad on Saturday, came into the side, and was very good. He didn't really put that much of a foot wrong. But then, you know, he's just a bit slow. And I think he will get caught. And I think with these kind of players there, Jim Hamilton, the ex-Saracens player, always used to say towards the end of his career, he called it going to the well. And that was every game he'd go to the well. And when he was young, the well was always full of water. When you start getting to this, and we've had the Christmas period, you've got a couple of these players that are going to the well and there's no water there.
They're going to the South Stand bar instead.
Yeah.
So, Pete, we sort of had Craig Clay come on in the second half and fairly influential, and also won us the penalty. What's your thoughts?
But again, I think it comes back to inconsistency. I know I keep saying this, but it is. Last year, Craig Clay was Player of the Year by a mile. You know, he found his level in the National League and he played really well. This season, he's struggled. When he's played
alcohol to the system from the party, yeah, probably. Yeah. Last year.
He's still carrying the champagne bottle, but but the thing is there's too many players. I feel that's my own personal thing that haven't stepped up from the National League to League Two, which is surprising because the majority of them have played in League football, League One, League Two before.
Craig Play played in the Premiership with Scottish.
That's the National League.
Yes, right, yeah,
But again, as you say, JMD on Saturday was putting in some lovely crosses in there. They were dangerous crosses, but we had no one in the box. You know, we've got Connor Wilkinson, who we signed as a centre forward from Dagenham, scoring goals for fun last year for Dagenham down the middle. We're playing him out on the right,
But doesn't Connor say he wants to play?
Well, this is a funny one, isn't it? Because Ross came out after the game as well. He had a good chance, didn't he? Obviously, great save from James McEwen on that one, header. Yeah. But Ross has come out and said, "I know he's playing in a different position, and I don't really know what the fans are thinking about it."
But surely, you've got to play a player in the best position for the club. Now, if he was scoring goals for fun in down the middle last year, then surely we should be giving him a chance to play down the middle now.
But when he played against us at Boxing Day at their place, he played down the right. So he was coming in from that right side. What he did in the header of the back post, when he headed it down, the keeper said, got his hands to it. I'm just going to throw a bit of a pot in here. Imagine those balls coming in from Saturday and Johnny Kindy's in the box, eh? Yes, yeah, so that's the big old brute there who's on potentially going to leave Lincoln.
Yeah. Going back to your point about Craig Clay, when he did come on Saturday... Yes, he played really well. He got us the penalty, and he moved the game up a gear. But you want to see that all the time.
Yeah, from 90 minutes.
90 minutes. Yeah, you can't just come on and play a 15-minute cameo. You know, if you want to, you've got to be there. You've got to do 90 minutes.
Yeah, cool.
Well, it's interesting, fellas. And actually, in terms of players that need to come into the club, of course, we did speak about Lawrence Vigouroux last week. Before we actually move on, we did speak to Richard Lee on the Goalkeepers Union podcast. He knows Lawrence Vigouroux quite well. Richard Lee, of course, previously with Brentford and Watford and of this very station as well. And gave us some good words on Vigouroux that I would imagine would be quite helpful to Leyton Orient fans.
So I know Lawrence very well. He's a massive talent. Massive talent and did very, very well at Swindon, it's fair to say, the time that he was there. I feel a bit sorry for Lawrence Vigouroux because he's one of these where there was £1 million price tag put on his head a couple of seasons ago from the owner of Swindon. Now, that never happened. And then things tailed off a little bit the following season for him. He's been in limbo, as you mentioned, for the last sort of 6 months or so. And part of the issue, I think, and this is where it's interesting now, rightly or wrongly, and I know Lawrence very well and I've got nothing but good words to say about him. But I know there were one or two murmurings that, one or two question marks about his personality. And you do wonder, and this is just, there are certain things that are easy to control. Now, one of the easy things to control is how people perceive you to an extent in terms of your reputation. Are you doing the right things in the gym in the morning? Are you preparing for games the best you can? Do you give absolutely everything you can possibly give every moment you're out on that football pitch or training or doing whatever you do? Now, if you do, no one can ever label that against you. Now, I'm not saying that Lawrence Vigouroux did or didn't do any of this stuff, but for whatever reason, in certain parts, he'd built a bit of a bad reputation. And I just wonder, someone with Lawrence Vigouroux's ability, it wouldn't surprise me if we see him back in the Championship, maybe even Premier League, given the ability, given the size, shape, the way in which he plays, he's got that much ability. So I really, really hope, and if he is listening, and that would be my biggest bit of advice to him, just keep your nose clean, keep your head down. This is a big opportunity for you. Go and show exactly just how good you are. Leyton Orient will allow you to play your type of game as well. So let's just see what you're made of, and hopefully he'll have a fantastic time there.
There we go. That was Richard Lee speaking on the Goalkeepers Union podcast. You can find that here on Love Sport every Saturday from 11 p.m. He's suggesting, gents, that Vigouroux could potentially make his way back into the Championship. What do you make of that?
But so Ross spoke earlier about he brought the keeper in. He knows him from Swindon. I read some of the comments online about his behaviour and the same issues we had with Brophy. I think one of the reasons why Brophy left Swindon and hasn't gone up the tree a lot quicker is because of his early doors attitude and things that he's got done behind the scenes. But one thing you always like a player in a club is a bit different. We were talking about Eldin earlier on the way over here, and I think he's got these marks of someone a bit of a character. I think he paid one of his fines in pennies, didn't he? win when he got sort of at Swindon. That's why I think they kicked him out because of that.
They kicked him out. Yeah, they sent him back to Liverpool.
I thought that was absolutely hilarious. If I can do that at work, get a finer work and do that'd be brilliant. So I think you're right. I think he's got those characteristics. I think he trusts Ross, and Ross says he was speaking to him every week, just as friends. So again, I think he's got some respect there, and I think that helps any platform to go back onto that consistency word, build a team from the back. Yeah, you've got a great, strong goalkeeper. I really feel sorry for Sam, and I do feel Sam will go by the wayside very quickly as back into the number two role. He hasn't done anything overly wrong, but I think when you're having that expertise at the back and being spoken about in high regard then, I think that shows that the club has made the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Pete, you mentioned there, you alluded to Ian Holloway, of course, coming in to Grimsby, bringing in a couple of players straight off the bat. Billy Clark, of course, scoring the opener.
Thank you very much.
At the weekend. Came in as a free shot. Gave away the penalty. So always bring it back. There's always a pro with the con. But in terms of targets, who would you like to see, or at least positional-wise, who would you like to see come into the club? Because realistically, what, we're mid-January now. We've got a couple of weeks left of this window.
Yeah, we definitely need to bring in a strong forward. We need someone up there who can who knows how to put the ball in the back of the net, really. We struggled. We lost 30 goals plus when we lost Caroma and Bon at the end of the season. And we haven't really replaced it. So definitely a forward, and definitely a strong tackling midfielder, from my point of view anyway.
Dale?
Yeah, no, I think I completely agree with that, to be honest. I think if we're gonna persist with playing the 4-3-3 that it looks like we are going to be playing, we need someone in the midfield to win that ball. Like previously, once again, I'll go down like a lead balloon, but Abu Adams did that job very well, but you know, the water's gone by the wayside. We wouldn't want to.
Not doing too well tonight, are you?
Well, I say, like,
three teams and then Abu Adams as well.
All I'm saying is that is the kind of player that we could have done with.
Yeah, true,
obviously the water's gone under that bridge. He burnt that bridge.
But there's got to be other players out there very similar to him who are playing under 23 football or not in the first side, a championship side, who want to step down to and play every week. That's the bit. You look across that midfield, we re-signed George Marsh to the end of the season. He should supposed to be in that tough tackling, but Ross pushes him a little bit further forward. One of the things Ross said is about his energy. He wants athleticism in the side, so that's what George Marsh is his tick box. That's the sort of player he wants. For us, I think, again, although he scored a few goals, 7-odd goals this season, Wright is one that he could be the one that probably falls short. I think Craig Clay's still got a lot to give. He gets around the pitch, but he can't just do it for, say, a cameo role for 20, 30 minutes. He's got to do it for 90. If he can do that, as he did last year, he's a great player.
And I think if you look back over the years, you know, we've always had a hard hitting midfielder.
Horrible little, you know,
what? Horrible little. Yeah, yeah, can't say the word, but I mean, you've got Dawson and Vince Lowe. And even going back longer than that, you've got Andy Harris.
Dave McGee.
You know, they weren't the prettiest of footballers, but you knew if they went into a tackle, they were going to win that ball.
Yeah, Stevie Castle.
And that's, I think that's where we're missing at the moment, personally.
Well, it's Port Vale up at the weekend, gents. A tough contest, of course, Port Vale with a win at the weekend. Their first ever over Stevenage in the Football League. Tom Pope with another goal to add to his collection. We are going to be speaking up with co-chair of Port Vale, Carol Shanahan, next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leighton Orient Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Julian Fern of the Lowdown Podcast, joined by superfans Pete and Dale Halls too. Now, gents, it is a game against Port Vale coming up this weekend, of course. They got a victory over Stevenage, their first ever in the Football League against Stevenage at the 10th attempt at the weekend. 1-0, Tom Pope popping up with an 88th minute win. How's your luck, by the way, Stevenage? I think that's in the past five games, four goals going in the last two or three minutes or so. Terrible run of luck for them. Julian, how do you see this one going?
For me, I think we had three at our place. We was turned over in the first half. I think we sort of stood off them. They just were very clinical in what they did. I think you look at who scored for them. You had sort of their centre half legs done the great there, and then Taylor and Burgess. I think for our point of view, I think this could be one that we start on our journey, because I think we're fairly equal on paper if you look at the squads. I think managerial bit. I mean, Oleski's been around, and he was in lower league for a while with Macclesfield and Shrewsbury, and then with Port Vale. So he's not got a sort of pedigree much better than Ross. So I think it'll be a score draw, or even a slight victory to the Orient.
Okay, well, delighted to say right now we have co-chair of Port Vale, Carol Shanahan, on the line. Carol, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Not a problem.
Delighted to have you on. Of course, it was a 3-3 thriller back at Brisbane Road in September. I'm going to throw out a little stat that the boys aren't going to be too happy about. Four games since the turn of the century, Leyton Orient have won one, Port Vale have won three times. So you guys have got quite a good record against the O's coming into this one.
Yeah, it was a good game when we went down to Lorient. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a good occasion.
How's life over Port Vale for you at the moment? Of course, a big job, a big win at the weekend, a massive game, of course, against Manchester City of late. Tom Pope scoring the goals. Are you enjoying it?
Oh, thoroughly. We took the club in May, and we were one of those lower league clubs that was in great danger of going out of business altogether, very much like Bury. And so Kevin's my husband, we took the club in May. We've had a relegation fight for the past 3 years, and now we're 10th. And if you'd have told me in May that, you know, come January you'll be 10th and you'd have just played Man City, I would have absolutely bitten your hand off. So, yeah, no, we're having a really good season.
Even with 4-1 at Man City, I think you did yourself very proud. I was sort of very pleased to watch that. And also, sadly, against Salford in the EFL Cup, didn't go quite to plan. But I think sort of 10th in the league, you've played 26, you won 9, you've drawn 11. So again, I think that's probably your bogey. It's very similar to Orient. We've lost more, but reality is we're drawn lots of the games that we should be winning. So even when you come to our place, I think 3-0 up, no disrespect, but you went in at half-time thinking, happy days, this could be a goal fest and be one of the great away wins. What do you think is going to sort of, what's your plans as a club over the rest of this season into next season? Is it looking to next year to promotion, or you just want to keep the club stable, afloat, and allow the fans still to have a club they can support?
Well, the plan for this year was to stabilise it. So I've always described this year as like a pilot season, and that we won't judge ourselves no matter what, because when we walked in, we had no idea what we were walking into. John Askey had been there since beginning of February, and he's quite an interesting appointment because he's local. His father used to play for the Vale back in the 50s. And so they're, you know, very well known. He played for us in the youth teams before he then went to Macclesfield. He was at Macclesfield for years. And what really intrigued me with him is that he took Macclesfield out of the National League into League Two with the lowest budget. And so he's very good at getting the most out of players, and that's exactly what he's done since he's been with us since February. So you've got players, for example, Dave Worrell, who this time last year was coaching with the youth team, wasn't getting a game at all, and he's now one of our stars, played extremely well against Man City. And that's a lot to do with the faith that John and Dave Kevin, who's his assistant, have put into them and the coaching regime. So they're getting, we might have the same people, but we've definitely got different players to what we had this time last year. And, you know, matches like the match against Orient, you know, we would have absolutely lost that last year. And so this year, a draw for us is a loss, whereas last year a draw was absolutely a win. In fact, I had sort of redesignated draws as wins last year to try and get some positive. Whereas this year we're absolutely gutted if we get a draw when we know that we could have actually won it.
So basically, Carol, what you're saying is, you know, the whole mindset of the club has changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's come positive throughout. You know, even when you just walk into the stadium, it's a lot more positive. I mean, particularly for your fans that are coming that have been there before, I think they'll find it a different experience to in the past. It's just a lot more together, and we've spent a lot of time this year bringing the club back, and so getting the academy and the foundation and the club to all work together, different departments to work together. It was very, well, it was broken, you know, and so to go in there, we're not judging ourselves on our league performance. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm so delighted. And we've been 10th for so long, we almost own it now. Because if we have a bad week, everybody around us has a bad week. If we have a good week, everyone around us has a good week. And no matter what we do, we stick to 10th. But, you know, that's really good. And Man City was just a bonus beyond words, particularly when you've seen, I mean, they were 4-1. There was two VAR decisions and they both went against us. In our league, both of those goals would have been disallowed. I'm absolutely sure of it. And I do have to question the FA Cup, where you've got VAR in some games and not others. It doesn't seem a level playing field. I think either everybody should have VAR or nobody should. But there shouldn't be this mismatch of some having it and some not. I mean, having said that, you know, we did not expect to go and win against Man City, don't get me wrong. But we did ourselves proud. And even the ref said to John Askey at the end, yeah, you should be proud of your players. They've done really well.
I couldn't agree more with you, Carol, about VAR. I'm not going to lie to you. Listeners of this very station will know that I rant and rave about VAR week in, week out. Just be thankful at the moment in Leagues 1, League 2 and the Championship that the EFL does not have it. I think it's a blessing that VAR is not in the EFL. Carol, it's been great having you on. Really enjoyed this. Just before you go, do you dare offer us a quick score prediction?
I never do.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, far be it from me to ever do, but I'm really looking forward to welcoming the team and the fans to Vale Park on Saturday. There'll be a warm welcome.
Lovely stuff. Carol, thank you very much for joining us.
Not a problem. Take care. Bye.
Carol Shanahan there, a co-chair of Port Vale. Really enjoyed that. So she's co-chair with her husband. They have their own company called Synectics. It's an IT company. I like the fact that they named it Synectics because apparently the definition is the coming together of people with different skill sets to solve a common problem.
Wow.
Isn't that nice?
Mm. Yeah, so they seem to have sort of not the management by committee there, isn't it?
Mm.
She's in charge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. It's nice, though, to listen to someone like that who's passionate about the football club but very knowledgeable as well.
Isn't it interesting as well, though, in as much as she was talking about John Askey, and the fact of how much he's embroiled in the Vale history and all that. And we're talking about Ross Embleton.
Oh, there we go, yeah.
So the comparison is there, isn't it, really?
Well spotted, Pete.
Like that. In terms of Vale Park, gents, been many times before?
Yeah, I've been before, yeah. And we were talking about it on the way over here. You know, I'm on a 50-50 about going Saturday. Yeah, I've got a few family things to do, but more I get closer to a Saturday, I think, I can have an argument with the missus on Thursday, so we don't talk Friday, go football Saturday. So what I say, if one of the boys wants to go as well, then I've got tickets to go. So I'm 50-50, but yeah, I've been before and I've had a nice time there previously, actually.
It'll be chilly up there, won't it?
Yeah. It can't be as cold as Oldham was a couple of weeks ago, and that was freezing.
Isn't Oldham supposed to be the coldest? Because it's the highest.
Top of the moors, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, Boundary Park. I'd say it, before this century, you had to go back to 1956 for the last win over at Vale Park.
Wikipedia doesn't work. I'll go online and change that later on.
That's the whole point of these records, though, right? They're there to be broken. That's the beauty of it.
Listen, we're a different club, different team. They are, by the sound of things, which is quite interesting. I think Saturday will sadly be what probably another draw. So I think very, very similar teams, although they're a little bit higher up the league. But you talk about they draw a lot as well. Yeah, and as you were saying, they're disappointed if they get a draw. Mm. But I think that's, again, that the Askey approach John has is that it gets a result, whatever that result is, win or a draw.
Isn't it interesting, you kind of look at it, and we're talking about comparisons and everything like that, if you look at the goals scored this season, both scored 33 goals this year, they're in 10th, we're in 19th, you know, it's obviously the shutting up shop, which when Ross came in, that was the first thing that he wanted to address. So, you know, if we can shut up shop, and, you know, maybe it isn't the fact that we need to score. After last season, we scored goals on goals, so everyone expects this again. But do we need to?
Absolutely. Gents, it has been nothing but a pleasure having you on with us today. Just before you all go, I'm going to do a round robin score prediction for Saturday. Dale?
1-1.
Pete?
1-1.
Julian?
2-1-0s.
Come on, you O's. This has been the Leighton Orient Fan Show here on Love Sport. We'll be back next Monday at 9 p.m. See you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.